All right, welcome to class. Glad to see you all here. Before we begin, I need to start with the sad news. Very sad news. So we use TPEG system to grade tests. Usually this lets us do thousands of tests in a day. It had some trouble yesterday when we were grading, so it went slower than hoped. So we haven't graded homework test two yet. Got the majority, but not the whole. So we're going to delay talking about test two until after that happens, or Friday, something like that. So we're not going to talk about it today, per the policy that we do not discuss exams before they're graded. So, are there any questions, comments, concerns about anything other than test two? Okay. So today we are going to talk some about chapter 8, a variety of sort of what's going on under the hood with classes. Be lots of opportunities to ask questions, clarify things that are a little fuzzy, hopefully. I will remind you, Sam Knox comes to our lectures. If you have a question that you don't really want to ask everybody, but you do want to know the answer, you're always welcome to flag him down. Raise your hand and look at him instead of me. He can come over and try to help you out. So that may happen some today. It may not, but he's always available if you want him. So today, what are we going to talk about? First, we're going to talk about chapter 8. Usually with chapters, I just say, do this chapter and ignore the stuff about J-option pain and you're good. Chapter 8, there's more we're omitting. So I actually have this little guide to how you read it. So we already discussed section 8.8, this. We did that. You're welcome to read that some more if you're confused about this. It's written in the textbook, maybe a different way than I describe it. Okay. There are four sections that we will ignore. Either because, well, various reasons. Mostly because I don't think they're important or I don't like their presentation. So sections 8, 5, 8, 6, 8, 9, and 8, 11, we're just not doing them. And so that leaves the other sections, 1 through 4, 7, 8, and 10. So we'll talk about some of those today. We'll hit one of them on Friday. We'll sort of venture a little bit beyond that as well as we sort of explore what's going on under the hood. So, that said, let's start by talking about static. So we got asked a lot of questions about static in the review. That's fine. Today is the day we're going to talk about it in detail. So we've seen some of this already, but let's start with this first vocabulary word, members. The members of a class are either its field or its methods or both. Okay. Anything that's inside it, we call it a member. And members can either be static or they can be what's called instance, which is non-static. Now, lots of ways to describe this. We tried one way on the review on Friday. I'm going to try a slightly different way of describing this today. Static is how Java misspells the word shared. Okay? So anytime you see the word static, think that they forgot how to spell shared and you'll be pretty good. So some attributes and some methods of a class are shared between all members of that class, and some are not. For example, I have here a little example based on chess pieces. Okay? Suppose I'm modeling chess pieces. Each chess piece will be in its own row and column. That is not shared. If you and I are both chess pieces and I am in row 3, you might not be. Right? You could have a different row. So we are not sharing the row. It is not static. But we are sharing how many pieces are on the board. Okay? If the number of pieces on the board changes, it changes for everybody. It's a shared variable. Shared between all of the chess pieces. How many are there? And the way we spell shared in Java is with the word static. Because we can't spell shared, apparently. So as we're designing in classes, you put static only if it's going to be shared between all of them. Like the total number of things might be shared. Or as we talked a little bit in the review about how like the idea of a species of something might be shared between all of the members of that. If it's not going to be shared between everybody, it's not static. Okay. Instead, it's what we call instance, and we just don't write anything to spell instance. So as you look at methods, the same logic applies there. Okay. A method is going to be a shared method, a static method, if it talks about the whole group instead of just one object of this type. If I don't care what object I'm talking to, it does the same thing. So clearly constructors are not shared. Okay? If I create a new chess piece, it doesn't change the ones that already exist. It'll change the count, it'll change the shared stuff about all of them, but it won't change the other ones' rows and columns when I create a new one. I'm not sharing the behavior of constructing an object. Each object gets constructed by itself. Similarly, when I move an object, move my chess piece to another square, only that chess piece moves. I'm not sharing motion. If I move one chess piece, I'm not moving the whole set of them. I'm not only moving sort of things that all of them have in common. I'm moving each one. So again, it's not shared. But a method like play chess, well, that doesn't depend on a particular object. The idea of playing a chess game is sort of shared amongst all of the pieces. It's not like the king plays the chess game and everybody else doesn't, or a pawn plays the chess game. We play the game with all of the pieces. So this might be something we might make a static or shared method, shared between all of the chess pieces. We could certainly write this program differently, so we had a chess game class, in which case play game would not be shared. Okay? But if we're modeling chess pieces, it's a reasonable place to put a static method. It does not depend on a particular object of this class. Comments, thoughts, feedback on that idea. Okay, let's briefly go back to early homework and talk about how this applied way back when. First homework we asked you to do, first class we asked you to write was C to F. Okay? For converting Celsius to Fahrenheit. Now C to F doesn't even describe a type of thing. I can't have a different C to F than you do. Right? So all of the things that I have in the C to F class are shared amongst all of the C to Fs. There are no C to Fs, but we're going to share it amongst all of them. And all we had there was a main method. Okay? Main methods are always shared. Main methods don't depend on a particular object of the class. They are shared between all of them. Okay? So it isn't a behavior, it isn't something particular to a particular class, it's shared. That was the only kind of method we had until we got to colored maps. Okay? And the methods in colored maps were also static. Meaning what? Meaning these methods do not depend on which colored maps object I'm talking about. As a matter of fact, I can't talk about colored maps objects. So we think about a method like read CSV. No part of this method depends on a particular colored maps object. So it's going to be shared by all of them. Any object can run this method, it does the same thing, or no object at all. I don't need one. So we've seen static all the way along. Until we start describing individual objects, everything shared, everything static. Once we describe individual objects, we start making them instance, because they're about particular instances of that object, and therefore remove the word static. That is, I think, what I wanted to say about static. So, let me just get a brief feel how you feel about the word static. Let's hold up fingers. 1 if you're totally lost and have no idea what I'm talking about. 5 if you think you've mastered the concept. Somewhere in between if you're somewhere in between. Just see what we're doing. Okay. So, a fair number of 5s and 4s, but also a fair number of 1s and 2s. Does anybody want to ask me any questions about static before I move on? Yes?
Can you say share objects and
objects may invoke a static method. Okay? So I don't need an object to invoke a static method, but I'm allowed to invoke a static method on an object if I want to.
It's
yes, they can. Yep. So I am allowed to make a new chess piece. Let's call our chess piece Ralph. And then I'm allowed to say Ralph.playchess. It's the same thing as saying chesspiece.playchess. Ralph is not actually involved in what happens, but I am allowed to talk to all chess pieces through Ralph. Yes?
So say like the field of a car having 4 wheels, would that be static because it applies to all the objects, or would it be non-static because it only applies to the property?
I probably wouldn't make it a field, okay? So cars having 4 wheels. Let's see what's a good way of thinking about this. How do I model that a car has 4 wheels? Wake up. Oh, it's not waking up. Why is it not waking up? There we are. Okay, so I want to model a car, and we want to model the idea that a car has four wheels. Okay? So one way is I can make wheels be an int. Okay, inside every car I have the number of wheels. That would mean each car can have a different number of wheels. Okay, probably not what I want, unless your cars all change number of wheels. I can make that static. There's not a standard way of putting those in class diagrams, but let's pretend we could just put the word static there. And what would that mean? That would mean all cars have a number of wheels. They all share the number of wheels. But that's still probably not what I want, because then somebody could come along and just change that number of wheels to 3, and then suddenly, poof, all cars have 3 wheels. Okay? I probably don't even want it to be touchable. So maybe I can make it final. And now nobody can change it, and it's a constant. Making it a constant might be the right thing to do. Or, alternatively, instead of making it a field in and of itself, I could model my car as having wheel 1 and wheel 2 and wheel 3 and wheel 4 as 4 individual wheels. Okay? What types these would be, we'll talk about in a moment. But another way to get the idea that there are 4 of them is to just have 4 fields independently. Or I could just say, I know that cars have 4 fields and do none of those. But making it a field, either static or not, that you can modify is an unusual thing to do, because it suggests that somebody can either change all cars' numbers of wheels or this car's number of wheels. No, I thought I saw a hand. Nope. Any other questions about static? Okay. Then let's move past static. Static is an interesting idea. We like static. But it's not a really big idea in the sense that static is pretty specific to Java. A lot of other languages don't have the same idea. They have a different way of handling this concept. So I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on it. A general understanding should be good enough. All right, so we've got static versus instance. The next thing the book has, actually 3 whole sections of chapter 8, devoted to using classes as types. Actually, let's just walk through an example here in actual code. Okay? So the idea, we've seen this before, a class defines a new type. You can use that anywhere you want to use a type, and that actually means anywhere. So let's do that. Let's make ourselves a class. I'll use sports team because I know where that goes. Not sports team. Okay. So I'm going to make a class to represent a sports team. What is an interesting feature of a sports team?
Mascot.
All right. So we've got a mascot. What type of thing should our mascot be?
Beaver.
What? It's a beaver? Okay, so we have a beaver named mascot. Okay, that's a little odd. Let's maybe make it an animal. Okay. So every sports team has an animal mascot. Of course, that doesn't apply to UVA unless you think Cavaliers are animals, which perhaps some people do. Okay, but we can do this. Now, I don't have to say animal. Merrick Java won't let me say animal because animal doesn't exist. Okay. So I define my sports team with a mascot that's an animal. I could define it as a string. Okay? And then it could either be Cavalier or Puma or whatever your favorite mascot is, right? But the problem with doing it as a string is that sort of limits what we can do later. Okay? If it's a string, then I don't get to decide what it looks like. And how tall it is, and how many times it beats up the other mascots, and so on. Right? I don't have room to add that kind of information. So making it a new type might actually be good. Okay? I can just introduce a new type from nowhere and use it as one of my fields. So I'm just going to pretend there's a mascot type. There isn't yet, but I'm going to pretend there is. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to add the mascot type. So I'm going to make myself a new class, and I'm going to make this class represent mascots. So I make a mascot class. And in here, I can describe what I think is interesting about the mascot. How about species? Okay, so every mascot might have a species, or perhaps we should just say name. That might be better. Because the cavalier would just be human, I guess, right? So every mascot's got a name, and we could put other information about our mascot in here if we wanted. We don't have to put other information in here. Okay, as soon as we make this a class, we can use it in another class. And this gives us flexibility. So you're just talking about, I can make the wheels of a car be fields of the car. What type would they have? Probably wheel. And then I define what's interesting about a wheel. And I could keep going. I could define mascots in terms of something else, costumes or something, and then I can make a costume class, which I could define in terms, and I can keep going as long as it makes sense. So sort of a key sort of takeaway here, as you're designing programs, it's a better practice to think of, how should I break this problem down? What should be the types involved? And then create classes to match those, rather than, what types can I munge into doing the right thing? Can I force a string to represent my mascot? Well, probably, because I can make strings represent all kinds of stuff, including entire Java programs. But I don't want to. I'd rather make a type that represents what I mean by a mascot, where I'm not restricting it to just animals or just names or just cavaliers or whatever I happen to be restricting it to. So what would this so I can make these as much as I want. Somebody else, so let's say, what's another interesting thing about sports team? Players. Okay, so let's say I have players. What type of thing should my players be? People? Like this?
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is fine. I can make a people class. Let's actually try making a people class. Okay? So let's make a people class to represent people. And what is interesting about people?
Human.
Human? How tall they are? Alright, we'll do tall. Okay? Or say the only thing you need to know about humans right now is their height. Okay? We could put all kinds of other things. We'll stop at height for right now. Okay? We'll add methods and so on later. But there's a problem already, actually. Okay? People have a height only. How many people does a sports team have in its players? Well, as I've written, one. Every sports team has one people. And that people has a height. And this is wrong. Right? Okay? When I'm defining a class, I almost always want it to be singular. Unless I mean to talk about a whole collection, I want it to be singular. If I mean to talk about a collection, then the most interesting about a collection of people is the persons in the collection, right? So I could make people be a whole set of persons. But probably what I want to do is, I've described here not people, but a person. One person. One person has a height. And then I don't just want one person to be a player, I probably want a list of persons to be my set of players. Okay? Is there anything wrong with making a people class that stores a lot of people? No. You can do that. But typically what I want my classes to be is, they should each represent one thing, one object. Okay? If I want several of them, I will make several instances of whatever that class is. So it's, in some sense, better to have a person class where I can describe one person instead of a whole group of people. And then when I want a group of them, I just make a list of them or an array of them or however else I want to have many of them on my team. Or if I knew exactly how many people I wanted on my sports team, I could just make that many variables, right? There's lots of ways of doing that. But if I can talk about individual people, I can talk about the group. So, questions, thoughts, reactions so far? Yes?
So, if you were to, like, you have your sports team class, if you were to define, like, another class in your sports team class, would that create problems?
Define another class in my sports team class?
Yeah.
Okay. It is possible to put a class inside a class. It is also possible to put two classes inside one file. Java does strange things in both of these situations. If you are interested in how that works, take CS2110. We'll talk about it. Okay? It would take a week to really explain it. We don't have a week to burn in this class. So you can do that, but for now, one class, one file, end of story, and your life will move relatively smoothly. You can do a lot of cool things. Other questions? Okay. So we can make classes be the fields of other classes. Okay. Like string, for example, is a field of the mascot class. Person, and ArrayList of person, is an attribute of the sports team class, and inside that it has lots of person objects, okay, a list of them. We can also use these things in methods, both coming in and going out of methods. So let's do that. Let's make a public, how about a recruit method, or recruit a person onto the sports team. Okay? I would assume that people get recruited onto sports teams. Having never actually played on one, I don't know. But I assume that happens. Okay? So I have a person can be recruited onto sports team, and what should happen when I recruit a person onto a sports team? I probably want to add it to the list of players. Okay, so I'm going to add to my list of players the new player. Hooray! Now I've got another player on my list of players. Okay, pretty simple. It is true that I'm allowed to use this class I made up as a parameter. This should not be overly surprising, but I'm allowed to do that. Okay. Let's also do... let's make one that returns a person as well. So let's also make a method that returns the tallest player. And I'm not going to actually bother writing the method out right now. I'm going to return this dot players dot, let's just say the first player is always the tallest by definition. This is clearly not correct, but it gives us a definition of the method to play with. Okay? So I can use person as a return type. I can use person as a parameter type. I can use person as a field type. I can use it anywhere I want to use a type. Once I've made it, it acts like anything that was built into Java. Wherever string can go, wherever ArrayList can go, so can these new types I have just added to the language. Okay? Any questions to this point? All right. Now we're going to actually write a little bit of code that uses this and see what breaks and learn a little bit more about null as a consequence. So I'm going to make a main method right in this class. I don't have to make it in this class, but I can, and it keeps everything on one page, which makes it easier to explain. So I'm going to make a public static void main string bracket bracket args. And all I'm going to do in this is I'm going to make myself a new sports team, which I'm cleverly going to call team. Hooray, I have a new sports team. I will make a new player, a new person, who I will name person. Okay? And then I'll have my team recruit the person. And, oh, how about then I print out my team? Okay. So I make a sports team, I make a person, I have the team recruit the person, I print out the team. There are problems with this program. It doesn't have any red squiggly underlines. It compiles fine, but it will not run. Why won't it run? Well, let's actually see that it won't run first, so you believe me. Okay? I run it, and I get this fun beastie called a null pointer exception. And it tells me where I got it. I got it on line 9, which is right here. Okay, this line right here gave me a null pointer exception. What does that mean? I understand null pointer exception. Is that a question or you understand? Great. Anybody else understand a player exception? 2, 3, 4, hooray! We are just growing by leaps and bounds. All right, let's explain null pointer exception. All right, so let me come over to where I could draw on this other machine. Okay, so when I create a person object, okay, so I made a person object called person, I'm just going to abbreviate it P. My person object comes into existence, and when an object comes into existence, all of its fields appear. There were two fields for this one. There was mascot, and there was team. Or players. I don't remember what it was called. Probably called players, wasn't it? Let's change that to players. Okay? I have a mascot. I have a list of players. When the object is first created, what gets put in the boxes? Zero, false, or null. That's it. These, both of these, are not numbers. A zero won't fit. They are not Booleans. A false won't fit. So what gets put in these boxes is null. Hey, null means this box could be talking about somebody, but it isn't. Hey, so I have a team that's capable of having a mascot. It is capable of having a list of players. But right now it has no mascot, and it doesn't even have a list of players. It's not an empty list. It has no list at all. The list does not exist. Then, at some point, inside the code, I end up saying this.players.add some person. Okay? This line of code was on the other screen, but it takes surprisingly long for this projector to switch screens, so we're just going to write it here. This is the line that had the null pointer exception. Why? When this program is running, this does exist. Okay? This is going to point to that same team. We talked some about how that works last week. Okay? So this exists, it points to that team. Dot means follow the arrow. So this, that's fine. Dot, we follow the arrow. We're now talking about the team object itself. Players is the box for players. So this dot players is this box right here. Dot means follow the arrow, but there is no arrow. I can net dot null. Dot means follow the arrow to whoever's on the other end. There is no error. Dot blows up. I get a null pointer exception on dot. I never even get to the add method because the dot doesn't work. Okay? You can't dot something that's null. And when you first create an object, by default, it'll get zero, false, or null in every field, and so your dots won't work. So, if we look back at the code, okay, this line is the problem. This line is the problem because players is null. Players is null because we never gave players a value, and so Java made it null for us. So when you're writing a class, really important, have a constructor that sets up all of the fields with a value. So let's do that. Let's make ourselves a constructor. Remember, constructors have the same name as the class. Okay, so I make a constructor. And the goal of the constructor is to set all of the fields to have reasonable values. So let's make this.mascot equal a new mascot. And this.players equals a new array list of persons. Okay? Simple little change. I've changed the default way objects get constructed. By default, zero, false, or null comes in. I said I want them to be made in a different way. I want them to be made with a mascot and the mascot and an array list of people in the players so that I have values for those things. So now when I run my code, when I make my sports team, I'm going to use the sports team constructor, which is going to set the mascot and the players of that to be values. And then when I call recruit, this.players will have that array list I created for it, and so I will be able to add my player to that array list. And we can see that if you want. Although it'll still look a little ugly, but at least it will run. Okay? We'll talk about how to make it print out nicely in a moment. We've seen it before, but we'll reiterate it. Questions? Would anybody like me to draw the picture of what this does? No? Okay. All right. So you want to have constructors. It's worth noting you can have as many constructors as you want as long as they all have different parameters. Right? So I could also make a constructor which takes the mascot in as a parameter and uses that to set the mascot. I can make another one which takes some players and adds them to the list and so on. I can make as many of them as I want as long as they all have different types that come in. That's also true of other methods. So for example, I could recruit a mascot too, I guess. It's unclear why I'd want to recruit a mascot. But perhaps I don't like my mascot, and so I could just recruit a new one. It is fine for these both to be named recruit, because one takes a mascot, one takes a person, so Java will be able to figure out which one you meant by the type you provide when you invoke it. Okay. So, we can use the types we define anywhere we want. I'm going to talk about one more place we can use them for a moment. And then we'll move on, talk a little bit more about toString and how and why that works and a few other sort of under the hood issues. So, we said the only thing interesting about a person is their height. But there are lots of other things interesting about people. For example, we could talk about the person's mother. Every person has a mother. That mother is a person. This is how the world works. If you're surprised by this, this is not the class for you. Okay, so every person has a mother. The mother is a person. That mother has a mother, and that mother has a mother, and so on back ad infinitum, depending on what your view of the ancient history of the world is, right? This terminates in protoplasm or God or who knows, right? But eventually, this is what we've got. Okay? So, how does Java take this? Java was actually perfectly okay with me saying every person has a mother. It will run this without any trouble. I can make programs that use this, but it looks like a circular definition. To understand how to make a mother, a person, you first have to understand how to make another person, their mother. So let's just briefly talk about how this looks inside Java. Okay? So in Java's memory, I make some person. Okay? I make a person object. What we said every person has is a height and a mother. Okay? It's a rather strange view of people, but it'll work. Okay? So this person, this first person we make, it has an integer height. I don't know. Let's say this person is height 17. I don't even know what units it is. It's just a number. We have a person of height 17. That person has a mother, which is also a person. Let's say this person has a much taller mother of height 123. And that person must therefore also have a mother. Okay? And this person's mother must have a height and a mother because that's what all people have. And so maybe this person's mother's height was only 2. And this person's mother... Oh man, this goes on and on. When will I hand get tired of writing? Okay? So this person's mother, let's say they have a height of negative 11. And their mother... Okay? And what happens? When does this stop? Well, so it might not stop in theory, but in practice it will always stop. And how could we stop it? I can stop it any time I want. No, this is not a loop. This is just the data. This is memory. I'm not doing anything. I'm just describing what memory looks like, okay? At any moment I want to, though, I can just say there are no more mothers. How do I do that? I just put a null in this box. Okay? Null. Who is this mother? They don't have one. They have the ability to have a mother, but there is no mother there. Okay? So Java doesn't care. In Java's view, this is just one object that points to another. Just the same as I can have my team point to a list, can point to players, point to past mascots and so on. I can also have one person point to another person point to another person. Eventually, I'm going to have to stop telling it to add mothers, and I'm going to put a null in there, and everything goes away, and it's just fine, right? Java doesn't care. It treats it the same as it treats any other kind of object. This idea that an object can be defined in terms of itself, that one object can have pointers to other objects of the same type, is really a big idea in computing. It will show up a fair amount in CS2110, it'll show up a whole lot in 2150, it'll keep showing up all the way up to 4102 if you stay in our program for a long time. It'll show up again and again. It's a very important idea in computing. At this point, I want you to sort of be familiar with the idea it could happen. Okay? And it's not unique to programming. We're used to this idea, right? We all know who our mother is, and presumably she knows who her mother is, and on back in ad infinitum. Even though I don't know who my 16th great-grandmother is, my mother knew who her mother was, and she knew who her mother was, and it's sort of all these little arrows along the way exist. Even though there's no arrow from one end all the way to the other. Same thing works in Java. Questions about this? Yes? It depends on what I'm doing. Okay? So if I were to try, let's suppose that, let's give some of these things names. Let's suppose I'm running some method where this points to that guy. Okay? And then if I were to say this dot m, so now I'm talking about that one dot m, now I'm talking about that one dot m, talking about that one dot m, talking about that one dot m, that will be null. So I put another dot here as a null pointer exception. Okay? But if I don't go all that far into it, I will never realize it was null. Okay? So null pointer exceptions only happen when you put a dot after something that is null. Otherwise, they don't occur. Other questions? Okay, great. Let's go back. Again, just from my understanding, fingers 1 to 5, how well do you understand null? Oh, good. Bigger numbers for the most part. I'm glad we understand null. That means we can move on to the next interesting thing. Okay. Let's talk about this sports team at sign thing. We mentioned this before. I want to reinforce this idea and sort of put it a little bit in context. Every class I create has a set of methods for free. And it's quite a large set, actually. Java gives every single class a set of methods. And I can find out what they are. I can type team dot, and I'll have a list of things I can get from my team. The mascot and players, I added those. But then it's got something called clone, it's got something called equals, it's got something called finalize and get class. Get tallest player, I wrote that one. Hash code and notify and notify all. And recruit, I wrote that one. Another recruit, I wrote that one too. To string and wait and wait and wait and main. Okay? So of the methods it has, I wrote less than a quarter of them. And a lot of them, I look at them and I'm like, what does it mean, wait? Or how about notify all? But what's it talking about? Okay? Java gives every object a set of methods so that certain things that are sort of built into Java will work. One of the things that's built into Java, for example, is the ability to display things as strings. So toString is a method every object gets for free. Because we need to be able to display things as strings. Java works on the assumption that this is always available. So we give it to everybody. Some of the other things that are always available seem weird until you get to particular subtopics of what's going on. To even explain what a hash code is would take me 15 minutes, okay? And then to actually understand why we need it would take quite a bit longer. So all of these things are provided. Most of them do the wrong thing by default. The two most interesting ones from our perspective are toString. That's how I draw things when I print them out. And then equals we've used a little bit. Okay? Equals compares one object to another. Typically, when I'm writing in my own class, I want to change from the default toString, which writes sports teams at sign 743399, to write something meaningful. And so what I'm allowed to do is take any of these methods that Java gives me, I can replace them with my own version, with something that does what I think makes sense instead of something that they gave me by default. So their default version of sports team, it's toString method, prints out, let's make this clearer here, that's what's going on. Okay, so the default version of the toString method prints out the name of the class, an at sign, and then approximately where in my computer's memory this particular object was placed, which might vary depending on when I run the program. Okay, where it gets placed in memory depends on all kinds of things, including what the operating system feels like that day. So it's hard to predict even what this will look like. If I want to make my own, I just write a toString method. So I make a public string toString, and I can make it do whatever I want. So how do you turn a sports team into a string? You don't. Hey. And now, anytime I print out any sports team, it's going to print out you don't. Because that's what I said sports teams look like as strings. Probably not the nicest way I could ever display a sports team, but it works. Okay? I can change how we turn things into strings. This action of changing what the default one is called, in Java speak, it's called override. Okay? I have overridden the default toString. Java allows you to put an at sign override in front of a method that is overriding something that's default. It does not require you to do that. I don't care particularly if you even know it's able to do that. You may, however, occasionally see Java, or see Eclipse in particular, creating these at sign overrides. If it does that, just know it means there was a default one of these, we didn't like it, so we changed it. Okay? You can delete it if you don't like it. And I'm not going to test you on that vocabulary. Although I will test you on the idea that we can replace the default toString method with one we write our own. Usually you won't want it to always return the same thing. Usually you want it to return something meaningful. Like, for example, this is mascot string. And perhaps also this is player string. Okay. Something to give me some idea what's going on. Often toStrings are defined in terms of other toString methods. Okay, and so now when I run this, well, mascot and person probably need a toString as well. But I see the string version of my mascot and the string version of my person. And to complete this, I would then go into mascot and person and give them toString methods that do something sensible as well. And once I did that, I'd be able to see how all of these things look in a relatively readable way. One other thing to know about toString. Because every object has it, Java lets us shortcut and just ignore invoking it. So if I just use an object and add it to a string, Java will insert for me without telling me it did so a .toString call. Comes automatically. Very common to leave it out instead of making it explicit. Questions? Nope. One more little thing to know about toString. It has to return a string. Okay? Because I am changing the default one to do something differently, I have to make it look the same. So I cannot make a toString that returns an int, even though it makes sense grammatically in Java syntax. It does not make sense because toString is special. It has already been reserved. I can't do that. Okay? All right. ToString. There are other methods that are nice to override. Equals is frequently overridden. Clone sometimes is. The textbook tries to describe how to do these, but it only goes halfway because the real way you write equals is really ugly. And so they didn't show you the real way to do it, but then the way they did show you isn't very useful, and so we're just not going to bother. Okay? In the real world, when you're writing classes, you write an equals method. There's some weird hoops to jump through. If you want to learn those hoops, take CS2110, and you learn the weird hoops you have to jump through. Two-string, though, I would suggest every time you write a class, such as, for example, you'll write a class for homework 6, you will want to write a two-string method for each class so you can print out what's going on and check your error, check your work. All right. I think that's what I had. Yep. Okay. All right, so that's the main topics I had. We have 5 minutes. I'm happy to take questions, or I have another little bit. I can talk a little bit about homework 6 if we don't have questions. Does anybody have any questions about anything we've talked about today or about how classes work? Yes?
So when you're writing a two-string method for mascot, would you put just kind of things like the string name,
the... Yep. Typically, what I would... Typically, your two-string methods will use the various fields you have available. Okay? So I might return mascot name. Okay? There's no magic to that solution, right? I'm allowed to return whatever I want to. I could return an anonymous mascot. I could even have an if statement and return one thing sometimes and something else other times. Okay. How I decide to do that is up to me. Okay? Just some method that returns a string is all we need. You notice I didn't give a name to my mascot, so it's mascot null. Very popular mascot. Yes? Why would I use it? So that I can print things out. Maybe I just realized there's ambiguity in the question. Do you mean, why do I explicitly write out two-string? Or why do I have a two-string method? The first or the second of those two? Or something else altogether? Why do I have the two-string method? The two-string method lets me print out things in a readable way instead of a hard-to-read way. Which is useful if I want to debug. It's useful if I want to present things, save them to files, whatever. Being able to turn them into strings nicely makes my life easier. Yes?
What do you need to write out to the
top? I don't need to write it out. Okay? If I don't put .toString, it will do it for me. I wrote it out here just to be explicit that that's what's happening. But if you leave that off, it will do that for you in a print or when you add it to a string. Other questions? Okay, let me take the last 2 minutes and talk a little bit about Homework 6. Homework 6 has not been released yet. We will release it tomorrow. You will talk about it some in lab tomorrow. It will be a paired assignment for which you will have 20 days to write your code. You will also find that the description of it is not as explicit as previous assignments. We will give you a description of what we want to do, some suggestions about how to make it do it, partial code that you can add to if you want. But the end result will be we describe how the game should run and you write that game. Okay? We will give you enough information that you can do this, but you should expect to do some design work. There are multiple correct solutions. They're significantly different from one another. Okay? So think about that before you start writing code. If you find yourself writing a lot of code in the first few days, you're probably doing it wrong. We'll talk more about what the code looks like, what the project is, and so on in lab, to try to give you some free feel of what's going to happen. You'll also be with your partner there, so you can start at the same time in your design. So I hope you all have yourselves a beautiful weekend, or beautiful day tomorrow in lab, and I'll see you all on Friday.